Yeah, hello, you heroes of the wastewater out there, or wastewater heroes. Yeah, for the first English episode of the, in Germany we say Abwasser Talk, in English it's Wastewater Talk. And we already have 30 German episodes, so, and now we try to get international. And I think today we have the real, the correct and best guest for this. It will be revealed a little bit later, but for our English listeners, you have to get to know the hosts first, because maybe you listen to the first episode in English and don't know the German ones. So we have to introduce ourselves. So my co-host, the best friend and up in wastewater hero can have, and yeah, great guy. His name is Daniel Jering. Daniel, say something.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to our wastewater talk. Nice to have you here. My name is Daniel. And now we want to switch to our guest. It's Rüdiger Heidebrecht.
Yes, I can say hello to everybody. It's very fine that we have got it English now, because I also suggested that. Because talking in German, we can only reach 10 million people, 100 million people. And English, of course, it's much easier. And my name is Rüdiger Heidebrecht. I'm head of the Department Training and International Cooperation in DWA. DWA is a German association for water, wastewater and waste. We are located close to Cologne and Bonn. And we are a technical scientific association. And we do standardization here in Germany and also in Europe. And we do a lot of training also for the German technical cooperation. So that's just the first introduction. So what are your first questions,
guys? Sorry, first, Daniel is the best co-host ever, you know. But I thought maybe he gives me the word back and says, who's the other host?
I thought you spoke already about
yourself. But you have to cut this later. So
yeah, all right.
So my name for everybody out there is Klaus Jürg. I'm co-host to Daniel, or Daniel. And the first episode in English, I'm really excited. I'm 36 years old. Daniel is 31 years old. So we are quite young still, and we have to learn a lot. And that's good that we have our guest Rüdiger here. He can teach us a lot. We already did a small interview in German. So now he will be our first guest in the English version. And yeah, Rüdiger, just tell us something about your resume. Resume is right, I think. How do you get to be the expert in German Water Association? What does it take to be expert for international affairs to get there?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I'm 64, so I'm nearly double as old as you guys.
You, both of us, to get
mine. you add them together and then you reach my age, I think. So I have another 2 years before I get retired. Now I'm already more or less 40 years in the water sector in Germany. And I studied civil engineering in Cologne. And I always wanted to go internationally. So I studied civil engineering and I studied technology in the tropics, is also a study in Cologne. And when I graduated there, I said, okay, even during the studies, I went to scholarships to Turkey for 3 months. I went to Netherlands, to the Rijkswaterstaat in Netherlands. And after my studies, I had a chance to go 6 months to Wales, to Welsh Water, to Swansea. And I tell you, when I was a student, my English was rubbish. And because I left mathematics and physics and languages, no way. But when I went to Swansea, all the people over there, they taught me a lot, and I liked it very much. So, and I got to know the first, I was a member of the British Association, SIVEM. SIVEM is the Chartered Institute for Engineering in the UK. And I learned how the British water sector worked. And that time, Maggie Thatcher cracked down the British water industry and privatized the water industry. This was, for me as a young German engineer, quite new. And I learned a lot during these 6 months. Then I returned back to Germany. I started to work. I became a civil servant in the German Water Association. I worked for the Upper Water Association in Cologne. And I was responsible for a couple of cities, checking them, looking for the design, approve them. Because whatever the cities are planning, it has to be according to the best available technology. And this is written in the German law since 1957. And since 1957, the association also developing standards, technical scientific standards in Germany. So I worked there for 3 years and then got a civil servant. And then I decided to marry my wife, first of all, which was a good decision at that time. And we decided to apply for the German Development Service, DED. And we went, we got chosen and we went to Nepal, to the Himalayan, north of India. And we went to Kathmandu and we settled in Kathmandu and in Pokhara, which is close to the Annapurna mountains. And I worked in Nepal for 3 years for the Department of Hydrology and Metrology. So we measured the rivers. I was doing a lot of training with the Nepalese people. I learned Nepali language as well. And my first son was born in Kathmandu, the second and later in Germany. And I returned back home after 3 years. This was a time when Germany got unified, which was quite exciting. I was in Kathmandu and in Germany the wall fell down. And I was completely surprised.
Exciting. Because we are from different sides of the German wall, you know? We are East German people and you are from West Germany, right?
Yes.
So basically you are like a globetrotter, right? You're like, you've seen everything. How many countries have you been to? Did you count?
Yes, I counted once. I forgot. It's more than 60. It's more than 60, and my aim is to reach 100 before I die in 20 years. So I still have something to do. Corona makes a problem with me, because I told my wife we should go to Oman, because that's my next on my list to make holidays in Oman.
Yeah, but if you make one country every year, then you have to get like 100. You have to be fast now.
I have to rush a bit, yeah.
You have to rush. You have to like make a... Yeah. Where is a lot of countries that you can visit all at once?
Oh, I did once a Trans-Siberian railway. I did once, which this was good. It covered Mongolia, Russia, but Russia is quite a big country, I tell you.
Yeah. It counts for two.
At least for two. It's a really big.
It counts for two. No,
but 1 week in the railway for 1 week. I tell you, this was a good, interesting time for 1 week.
Yeah. So you could say that you are like you came around a little bit on the globe.
Yeah.
On the blue ball.
And then I came to the association, and in the association they asked me. I just joined the association. And then my boss came, he said, you speak English. I said, yes, I was abroad. You have to go to Heathrow because we're doing technical standardization in Europe, in CEN, the European Standard Institution. So I had to coach and translate some of our experts in DWA. So I coached them for a while. And I was working then for 5 years in TC165, which is a wastewater engineering technical committee in CEN, and we developed the European standard 752 sewer system outside buildings and the 1610 pipeline. So I was in the working groups of that. So I traveled a lot in Europe, from Lisbon to Prague and Paris and everywhere. And we did also a dictionary at that time because we need to collaborate in German, English, French. So I did that for a while, and I liked it very much. And then I got appointed from my boss asked me then, do you want to take over the educational area? So I took over the training department, and then I added, because I'm an international guy, I added also then the international wing, because we're doing a lot for the trade shows. You know, the IFAT is the biggest trade show in the world.
Where is it? Just stay a little bit there. We can come to AFOD later. I just wanted to discuss a little bit. So basically what I just wanted to say is you are like, you came around a little bit. And this is also the topic a little bit of our show today, to say, okay, what is different from the German water sector, where we three are like in Germany and like see the German water sector every day. and see how it works in Germany. And what we are interested with the English podcast now is to maybe compare a little bit. How is it in different countries? How is it done in over Europe? And you already said you were in Asia a little bit. And how is it different? So you already spoke a little bit about standardization. Can you learn? How would you say can you learn the most about other water companies? Is it IFAD, or how would you start if somebody is interested in to get to know something else than the German water sector?
Oh, then I think it's good to go to international conferences like Stockholm Water Week is every year. It's very good. I used to go there to go to the IFAD, of course, trade show. There are a lot of foreigners coming up there. Also, IWA, the International Water Association, our main organization, they have a conference every 2 years. The next one hopefully will be in Copenhagen. So I think that is a possibility to join in, and especially for young people. There is a young water professional program in IWA. I think that is also a good chance.
So you can Google it, iwa.org, I think, is the website.
And also the young DWA, they're also making now connections with some Australian young water professional programs. There's every 2 years is a conference for young water professionals somewhere in the world.
And especially if you listen to this, there's a what is it called? Stammtisch. There's a round table. From the WA for international people. If you are interested, it will be in, let me look, in some days, in 12th of February is the date, so next week. So if you're interested, and or maybe next time when it happens, it's like every half year or a quarter of the year, they make people around the world. It's in English, and you can maybe join in and if you want. The information is also on the website of the DWA. You can find that out. So this is for like networking internationally. Yeah. So basically, you can also Google Rüdiger. He will also help you. We will make him in the show notes, and you will get thousands of emails later. So
in Europe, we have the European Water Association, which is also located in Hennef, where DWA is, because this was founded 40 years ago. So this is the association of the association. So if you want to know some people from Finland, you can contact us, the European Water Association, and we get you through to Finland, guys. So we can find out people for you. They also have a Brussels conference once a year, the European Water Association. So if you're interested in European affairs, then you go to the EWA Brussels conference, and they're also running some others. You know, in Europe, we have the City of Environment once a year, and they're also running shows over there. So it's a good connection in Europe if you want to connect there. The European Water Association is, I think, one good address to join and to find out who is who.
So, but basically, what is the difference now? So we discussed, okay, we can network a little bit and you can help us. And there's a lot of different associations, German Water Association, European Water Association, International Water Association. So we can network all of there. So, but what is the difference? I guess like also water flows downhill also in
everywhere
in Asia, yeah. I think. But how is it different? The length
is different. If you go to the UK, I think there are not many rivers who are longer than 60 kilometers. Mm-hmm. And they are flowing the oceans. When I was a young engineer, I came to Swansea, and the first wastewater treatment plant they showed me, this was in 83, they showed me a long sea water outfall and one pumping station and 2 kilometers pipe into the sea. This was something new for me at that time. They changed that now by the time.
But so they didn't have a treatment plant.
At that time, this was Port Talbot, which is an industrial area close to Swansea, and they just had the long sea outfall. Also, Swansea at that time, they just had a big tank inside the rocks, and when the tide came, they pushed the wastewater out. So this has changed, and in the end of the 80s, Swansea became a wastewater treatment plant, and now everything is like what we do. But we, as Germans, we are not used to use the sea as, let's say, storage capacity. And also in Portugal, there was many long sea outfalls, but this all closed now. And because we said we cannot pump the wastewater into the ocean and then let it go. So I think that is also the benefit and the achievement of the European community, that we have a clear standards. And also in Europe, we try to get the same standards everywhere. So I think that is very much important. When Poland became, Poland, Hungary and Czech Republic became members of the European community, we were running a program and we got some a couple of million euros to run technical conferences with the Polish associations and also with the Czech association. So we traveled a lot, and there's differences, of course. If you see with the French, if you talk with the French guys, they always have big companies here. Yeah, there are two, three, Degrimaud, Veolia, and so on, General Dassault, Lewis. They're all big companies because it's a historical development what happened. We are in Germany, we're all small kingdoms. You know, the King of Bavaria and the Prussians and the Hamburg people, they are the Hanse, they were strong guys. So we are kingdoms in Germany, and we got united 1871. So and of course, we keep this water law is a regional law in a way in Germany. Still, it's still there. But in France, it's much more centralized. In the UK, when Maggie Thatcher smashed the water industry and pushed them to privatization, I saw a lot of companies, Thames Water, Severn Trent, around in the world operating and running water utilities. But later on, they gave up because they lost a lot of money, and now they're back in the UK. So there's a difference historical-wise that the situation is differently. In the German-speaking area, and I would say also in the Benelux, Netherlands, Belgium, and Luxembourg, I think it's a pretty same ideas. Whenever we had a discussion on the European level, it was always, let's say, in a coffee break, there was the German-speaking and the Dutch and the Norwegian guys. And there was a group of French philosophy and then the British philosophy. And then we merged together and created European standards, which is good because it's good for the industry, it's good for the image, and good for our recognition in the world. And when you look now, the European standardization is going everywhere now in the world. Even North African countries like Egypt, Israel, Lebanon, Algeria, they are affiliate member of the European standardization. That means they are ready to take the standard. They don't have to take the standard, but they can choose the standard they want to take. They don't have to develop their own standards because there are already a couple of standards around. So in wastewater, we have about 160 harmonized European standards. In drinking water is more or less the same amount. So this harmonization and technical wise is very important for Europe. And a pipe laying European standard for clay pipes. It was one of the first standards which was Europe-wise. It was clay pipes and the same standard from Portugal to Germany. Now we're getting clay pipes from Egypt because they're producing the clay pipes according to European standards, and we get a lot of containers from Egypt, and they are built in Germany now. So European standardization gives open markets. And we say in Europe that we need about 15,000 to 20,000 harmonized European standards to create a common market.
Now they always say, "Oh, you Germans, you also." It's like a little bit. I mean, it's harsh. Maybe I say you wipe your ass with the standard a little bit.
Oh, we love standards. The Germans love standards.
We love standards. So, like, we have so many standards. How is it in other countries? Do they also have? I mean, you said like a comparison. We have standards from here to the moon, and they have like more. Or is it? Do we have too much?
That's a good question. We have a lot of discussion, indeed, if we have too much of them. But on the other hand, I think we have a high standards. We are a lot of people when we get delegations. Last time we had a delegation from Nigeria, yeah. And they asked me the question: "You guys, Germany is a rich country and a lot of industry. But you can swim in the rivers. How you do that? Yeah, why?" And I said, we have a lot of standards. It's very, every intake is controlled by the water authority. And I think we wouldn't swim in the rivers if that would not be the case. So we Germans love standards, that's pretty much sure, but we are an industrial country. We are manufacturers of automobiles in the world up to now. So we love the standard. I just tell you one story. To couple of years back, I went to the USA on holidays, and I met some of my friends from WEF, World Environmental Federation. And I asked them, what are your standards? And they said, we are not doing standards, we're doing guidebooks in a way. So a couple of people come together writing handbooks for training, for things like that. The same day I went to the American Waterworks Association, they're also in Washington, and they asked the same question, how many standards do you have? And they told me, oh, on the website that day, they said we have 160 standards. And they told me, oh, in wastewater, we don't have many of them. So we have in drinking water, but in wastewater, we don't have. So in America, I couldn't find out real tough standards on that. Then in the same year, I went to Moscow to give a lecture about European standards in the Ministry of Interior. And after my lecture, I asked the Russian people, what is your standards? When was the last standards you produced? And they said in the 70s. So that is the way they do it in the way. And a lot of people and a lot of Germans who are working international, they say the German standards are very, very well known and are also used in many countries.
What is the craziest standard in your opinion in Germany?
The craziest? Yeah, you see, I did a workshop 2 years ago in Iran with the Iranian Standard Organization, and I asked the guys, what is your standard? And they always told me something from design and construction. And then I asked the question, what about operation and maintenance? They said that we don't have any of these standards. So we have a standard on how many stuff you need for a wastewater treatment plant. This is a crazy standard that you say.
What do you mean? But how many stuff? How many people?
How many people you have to hire when you build a wastewater treatment plant, 100,000 population equivalent? So how many guys you need? How many mechanical engineers you need? How many electricians, plumbers, whatever you need? And you can go into these standards, and then you see exactly this is a technology, and I need a half guy every week for this one. So you can calculate the amount of stuff for your wastewater treatment plant. I never saw this kind of standard in other countries. So this is pretty much. And also when we have water protection areas, you know that in Germany, 18% of Germany is water protection areas. If you put a wastewater pipe through a wastewater water supply protection area, you need a double security. You need a pipe and a pipe. Mm-hmm. That is our standards 142. And if you tell that other people in other countries, they'd say, what the hell are you doing? Water protection.
Yeah, but I mean, it's already crazy that you know the number, right?
Oh, I was in charge of that because this standard made me a lot of trouble when I was.
Yeah, but if I hear this now, I say, that makes a lot of sense to have two pipes, because if the inner pipe gets damaged, then all the wastewater flows into the water, the groundwater.
Yeah, exactly.
And we have this, I don't know, do you drink water from tap water?
Yes. In Germany, I drink. In Austria, Switzerland, I would drink. UK, I'm not sure. In China, I would not drink at all. It's not the target and the aim of the Chinese water people. I know some of them. They told me never drink from the tap. Also in Nepal, when I lived in Nepal, you know, when you're traveling these countries, India, Nepal, you know what happens with your stomachs from time to time. So I wouldn't drink from that as well.
I mean, we have a person, Norbert is his name, and he will tell us in a future episode of Abwasser Talk or a Wastewater Talk, he will tell us something about water reuse plants in Namibia.
Namibia, Windhoek.
They have for 50 years already, they have a water reuse plant. Yes, this is something we don't have in Germany. I already heard.
No, we don't have that. We have only the wastewater recharge or reuse is only in Braunschweig and Wolfsburg in Germany, because they don't have a river. There's a lack of river.
I didn't know that.
They recharge the water into the groundwater table. Groundwater table is also aquifer, and it's also by water law, it's water. And they recharge the water back into the ground because there's no river. If you don't have,
I didn't know that.
Wolfsburg, Braunschweig, there's a lot of history how to use wastewater for agricultural use because you have to bring it into the ground. I listened to Windhoek. We had the IWA conference, wastewater reuse was 2018 in Berlin in Germany. Mm-hmm. And there was a lecture from Namibia, and I listened to that lecture. 1/3 of the wastewater goes direct back into the drinking water pipe next day, because there's 700 kilometers north is one river and 600 kilometers south is the next river. So they need to use that water straight away. And also, if you go to Singapore, they have a very nice exhibition there. They call it New Water. Singapore has the aim to recharge or to reuse wastewater to 70% of the total amount. And they now recharge it, I think 30, 40, 50%. I don't know exactly the figure. But that is already recharged, but not for drinking water purpose, for industrial purpose.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
And their aim is to reach 70%. And I remember I took some bottles with me from Singapore, and I brought it to my office in DWA. And I had a meeting with my staff. I said, "Oh, guys, I brought you a nice present from Singapore." And I poured it into the glasses. And they asked me, "Rudiger, what you brought here? This looks like water." Said, "I, that is water. That is reused water." And some of my staff refused to drink it because I explained it to them. This was wastewater, and now it's bottled, but it's clean and clear and everything. But some of my staff refused to drink it. I drank it because I know the Singapore guys are good in these things, and it's possible. Even if I listened once to an astronaut in Sweden, Stockholm Water Week, they asked an astronaut to come and to give a lecture about wastewater in the ISS. And he gave a nice lecture. He said, "Okay, you pee your urine and next day you drink it. The technology is there. Nobody comes and brings you a bottle of beer in the ISS up there."
Too bad.
The technology is there. It's a question of money and the question of mindset, how to reuse. And we also say in Germany that we reuse in a way our water, because the River Rhine, some people told me a drop in the River Rhine is used 5 times before it comes to Rotterdam. So we take the water out, then we need a lot of water for cooling in Germany for our power plants. So there's a lot of the city of Cologne, they take the embankment filtration, pump it another 20 kilometers, soak it way in the ground, and then take it out. So sometimes you don't know how long the drop is already in the freedom before you take it back to your system.
Mm-hmm.
So sure. In a way, we also reuse the water, but not directly that we just pump it back. In Spain, they use a lot of wastewater for golf playing. You play golf, yeah? So if you go to your golf court, ask them if they use your toilet water for greening purpose. That is done a lot in Spain and in other countries as well.
I have the next good question. Where's the craziest treatment plant?
The craziest one.
Or the best.
Maybe not crazy. The
craziest,
the
best.
I don't know.
The worst.
I don't
know. Most extraordinary.
That's a good question.
That you ever seen.
The craziest. What crazy? I've been in Kathmandu once with some friends. And I said, okay, let's go to the wastewater treatment plant in Kathmandu. And when we reached there were not many people there, but they let us in, and then we looked around and we decided this is a let's say it's a wastewater treatment plant where you move the water, let's say this way. You move it around, but if you treat it, I have my doubts. So this is quite crazy. And then sometimes I've seen my boss, he showed me once some pictures from Japan, because they don't have a lot of space. So they built a wastewater treatment plant, and on top was a tennis court where they played tennis. So it's completely covered. And I think that is also crazy when you really see that you have the infrastructure inside the city, nobody sees it. because you don't have space to do things like that.
I saw the same thing in I was on a cruise ship in Baltic Sea, and we made a stop in Helsinki, and I had a contact there, and I visited their treatment plant. So I went from the harbor with the bus to near the treatment plant. I had on Google Maps, I had where I have to go. So I went there, and then I came from the bus, and I was in the middle of a residential area. Yeah. In the middle, there was some houses and some gardens. And so, hey, where's the treatment plant? Where's the treatment plant? It was inside of the mountain. Yeah. So there was like a small building. I went in there, and then you go to a elevator a little bit and go straight inside of the mountain.
Yeah.
And there was nobody working there. It was like they built, they took some dynamite, like maybe from Mr. Nobel, they had some left, and put it inside of the mountain, and they had all the what you say, what you know from Germany, like outside, they had this all inside of the mountain, very high specialized, high automated. I never see one person in there. When I was in there, it was the whole treatment plant for the complete Helsinki. And also I was surprised, I met there with three women. Three women? No, I didn't see a male person. Female person.
If you go to Iran, I was a couple of times in Iran. If you go to plants, drinking water, wastewater plants in Iran, the managers of the plant are mainly women in Iran. I never expected that, but they are highly qualified, highly trained, extremely good. Another story: we went in 2015. We went with a team of to Chicago to go for the skills competition. Yeah, and with two German teams from Düsseldorf and our all-star team. And we also had they showed us around in Chicago, and then we went to a retention tank for the rainwater. We came in there, it was a huge tank. The pipe what came in was, I think, 6 meter diameter. I said, what the hell is this kind of retention tank for stormwater? And they explained to us, I think it's nearly 100 kilometers. In America, a lot of motorways. When it rains, you get a lot of dirty water, and to keep Chicago dry, they built a huge pipe and then into a retention tank. And then we went into the in front of the treatment plant, and the incoming pipe was nearly 50 meters in the ground, and they had to pump it up. And then on the top was a wastewater treatment plant. And then we looked on the wastewater treatment plant. Chicago is really big. And we had a bus to go there. And then they dried the sludge on big drying beds. I never saw such big drying beds, I tell you. They are using caterpillars from to move the sludge in there. I never saw such a big drying beds for such a big city.
Okay.
Sometimes if you travel around, you really realize what we know here in Germany. We have 9,150 wastewater treatment plants, but if you look around in the world, it could be different depending on the country and the countryside. And
so there's a lot of crazy stuff. I also visited Kazakhstan once and was in the second biggest city of Kazakhstan.
Astana?
No, it's the third biggest. Sorry, I was in with K. I don't know the name anymore.
Astana is a capital.
Astana is the bigger city. I was
in Minsk capital. Yeah.
I don't know the name. I was in the treatment plant, and it was also very, very big. And they had also these dry beds you said, and it was still Russian standard. So they are still using the standards from the 70s, and they had built this with Russian or Soviet standards back then. And it was so big. Yeah, they already had like these big towers for the sludge. For the fouling, they already had this stuff, and also they have huge dry beds in the end, and the rest of the water goes into the countryside, because they have so much land, right?
Yeah.
So this is completely different everywhere. I think in Finland, where I was in Helsinki, it was also because it's so cold in the winter. So outside, it's also a bit of a problem if you have a wastewater treatment plant outside. So it was also maybe a reason. But I want to elaborate on another thing you said. You set a skills challenge in Chicago.
Yeah.
Maybe you want to elaborate on this a little bit. What is the skills challenge? Maybe there you can also meet German and other wastewater people. What is this?
Yes, we started in 2009. My boss, Johannes Loos, he came from the WEF conference, from the American conference. He came back and he showed me some pictures and videos and said, look, the Americans are doing this operators challenge. They call it ops challenge, operators challenge. Teams coming together and they are repairing pumps. They make climbing into a manhole, rescue people. And then he asked me, can we do that in Germany on the IFA? They said, yes. And then we started 2010 to create a skills competition for the German sector. And that was on IFAD. We also created then the university challenge for the students, so that not only the workers, also the students have some fun. And in 2013 in Leipzig, on the trade show in Leipzig, we had World Skills. World Skills is an organization more than 50 years old. 80 countries in the world are joining, and in more than 60 skills. And we could make that the skill 55 is now water technology. And when we started on the IFAD, we also invited the American team. I know the guy from America, Steve Harrison, and I invited him to come. And they came with a team from America to IFAD, and we had a lot of fun. We also invited the Egyptian team, and also we had some from Slovenia and Austria. And so the teams are coming together, and there's a challenge and a lot of fun. And of course, then Steve Harrison said, come over to our challenge. And I went over there to see, first of all, New Orleans one. And I said, okay, next year I come with a team. And I came with two teams. City of Düsseldorf choose young people to motivate young people. And also some of my judges, they wanted to come. And then we went to Chicago and we had a lot of fun, more than 40 teams and a big spirit. And we did not win anything, but I think we got from out of 40, I think we were 28. Yeah, one of our team was number 28. And the Americans since then, they're always coming to the IFAD. So next year IFAD, I'm sure that the Americans are coming again. Egyptians most probably, Jordan is coming now. Albania told me that they want to come. There's a GIZ project in Albania. They promised me to come with the students and with the workers team. So this is also a skill competition. And you did already a podcast about World Skills Water Technology. And in China next year in October, we have already 17 or 18 teams from all over the world. From South Africa, from Brazil, Belarus, Ghana, I heard, is also in the line. Egypt wants to come, Vietnam, and so on. So it's also kind of family, World Skills family water technology, which we created. And we're pushing that because education, that is also something unique in the world. People ask me, what is unique? What is different in Germany from, let's say, British or French? And I always say two things. One is the standardization, what we have, because it is quite unique. And the second one is that the skilled workers. We started in 1984 to create a job in Germany, which is recognized by the government, a 3-year dual system, educational system. And this is hardly found in the world.
Let me stop. Can you stop a little bit?
Yes.
We have one more question about this word skills challenge. Daniel.
Okay, who is actually the champion in World Skills in number 55?
Now this is Aswanta. He's from India. He's number one, and the Chinese guy, they won number one. And number two was not there, and number three was Singapore.
Okay.
And number four was Korea, I think, and number five was Germany.
So, and how you can be the world champion?
Yeah, you have to train a lot. Yeah, this I quite in contact with Aswanta. He's from India, And by the way, this guy, he's a nice, charming guy. I like him. And he's coming to Stuttgart. He will study his master now in Stuttgart.
Hey, you have to bring us in touch with him maybe a little bit. Yeah. We have a round table here.
Yes, in Stuttgart. He will come to Stuttgart most probably by this year. And he will study in Stuttgart at the Warum Studies. And
it's a neighbor, Klaus.
Of course, he trained a lot. He's a kind of mechanical engineering and mechatronical engineer as a bachelor. And he did a lot of efforts. And of
yeah, course, you just sent me his contact information. I'll show him around in Stuttgart. I live here, yes, and so
that would be nice because he's a really nice guy. And
if you listen to this, yeah, give me a call.
Right? Yes, I can.
So, but now the question from Daniel was, Rüdiger, we have a lot of listeners here, 1,000 people from all over the world. So
hopefully,
right? And everybody will listen to this, and they will ask themselves, "I want to be world champion." And maybe I'm from a country that maybe. Where do I find out? Where's my country? Where's my coach coach from my country? Or can they send you an email and you bring them in touch or something?
First of all, you go to the website of World Skills International,
okay.org,
and there's a members list. There's a world map, and in the world map you see a map like here, what I have hanging here. The only white spots is Africa. Most of the other countries, Asian countries, they're all members of World Skills. And then you look in the member list, and in the member list, you find one contact in each country.
Okay.
The main person, responsible person for each country. So you send him an email and said, who is for skill 55? And then we will bring him in contact. If you decide that, okay, I want to be a champion, and if you say, what was the task and what the duties of the last championship, then you can send me an email and I give it to my staff, and they will connect, they will give you a database where all the different tasks from the last skills competition are available.
So if you listen to us now, you are from, like, say, a cool country. What is a cool country? I say Indonesia, or you are from Argentina.
Yeah,
I want to be in Argentina sometime, or Brazil, or like some country like Australia. You are from there and you say, I want to be world champion in wastewater or water. Then you just give Rüdiger a call, or you go to the website, just give Rüdiger a call or an email. He will forward you to the people. And you can be a world champion maybe, and also give us a call.
First of all, go to the website h2o-skills.de. All the skills I know, what I have seen in the world, not only world skills, there are also other skills. Pipe tapping is a skill for drinking water people in the UK, for instance, or in Netherlands. So there are a number of skills. Also septic tanks drivers, there's a skill in Tanzania. So all the skills I know, I put that on this website.
Okay.
Because it's not only for the young sets, we're also doing the skills competition for the older guys. So if one
is put this in the show notes, so everybody can look at it.
And the other one is the professionals, because there are a lot of skills competition in Brazil. I've seen in Sao Paulo on the Fenasan trade show. I saw a very nice skills competition from the Brazil Association. But not for the youngsters, for the professionals.
Okay.
And in GIZ in Tanzania, they made a very nice skill about water meter, connecting water meter to a house. So skills competition, doesn't matter how old are you, motivating the stuff and creates fun. And the best way of learning is if you have fun.
I think it's a complete week. Hilmar told us in the last podcast. It's 1 week or 2 weeks already, he said it's just pure fun. So you join it in it, and yeah.
The Americans, they do it since more than 30 years. They have the Operators Challenge, but not for the young people, for the older guys, because in America there's no educational system like we have it. I told you, 3 years of education before you become a wastewater operator. In America there are a couple of courses you can join in different levels, ABC. There's also an organization called ABC CERT. They have a certification system. It's a totally different way of education than what we have in Germany. But they take it as motivation, as a recognition that the workers also can achieve something, and that the bosses are coming and looking, what is my team doing? Normally, the bosses are not very much interested in looking what the workers are doing. But if they are on the challenge, then even the bosses are coming. Oh, we are number one. We are proud.
I think it's contagious, you know. You have a little bit planted a virus in me, a little bit. It's a bad word at the moment. Your excitement for all of this is contagious a little bit. I hope everybody who's listening is a little bit also infected. And where can you meet Rüdiger in person? Maybe Corona is over this year. Hopefully everybody is vaccinated. Next year, where can they meet you? Where can they get to know you?
On the IFAD in Munich, I will be there the whole week. You see me there in the challenges as well. I will looking for that. I'm not involved direct in the challenges. We have a working group on that. Hilmar Tetsch and Michael Dörr and these people are very, very engaged people. You see me in WorldSkills China in Shanghai next year in October.
Okay.
I always going there and I do the media work and the video. You see all the videos from Kazan, from Russia on my YouTube channel. And also from Abu Dhabi, you see them on my YouTube channel. So I'm doing a lot of promotional things to them.
How do I get to your YouTube channel?
My YouTube channel, you go to YouTube, you type in Rüdiger Heidebrecht, and then you see my comic face. I have a comic face over there. And then you go in and you see more than 60 videos I did myself. And then you see playlists, and in the playlist is Kazan 2017, WorldSkills Kazan 2017, WorldSkills Kazan 2019. And most of the videos are watched from India. Because I have the champion from Aswanta, and he posted it in India. And most of my clients in my YouTube channel are young people from India, watching his hero how he repaired the pump in Kazan.
So 60 videos for 60 countries.
No, that's not right. I do also some videos from DWA explaining our educational system. There's a video how our educational system works in English and in German. There's a video about 360-degree wastewater treatment plants. So you can go on a wastewater treatment plant in German or English. You can choose. And then you can turn around with your mouse. If you have a virtual reality glasses on, you turn your head, and then you have the feeling that you are on a wastewater treatment plant. It's all for educational purpose. So most of them, I always tape German and I tape English because I'm also a lecturer in English for the students here in some of the universities.
Okay, it's not my favorite language, but at least we have some questions. Now, are you ready for the last questions?
I'm ready.
Short questions, yeah.
Short answer.
Just have to told us a little bit tendency. Central or decentralized sewage disposal?
That really depend in the country like Jordan as an example. For the country which has no water at all, to use water as a transport material is nonsense, in effect. So in countries where water is short, to use the water for transport, it makes no sense. I would strongly recommend to have separation toilets and to do decentralized with not many long pipelines. In a country like Vietnam, where you have a lot of water, so what? That's no problem. But if you're in the countryside, then I would always go into decentralized areas because otherwise it's getting expensive. And it's also the question of money of the countries. And in Nepal, you can imagine I lived in Nepal. It's pretty steep and hilly. Don't start pumping. Yeah, it makes no sense. Yeah.
So okay.
It depends on the countries and the situation.
All right. Second, private or public wastewater.
Oh, that's a critical point. If you talk with different people in the world, you get different meanings. I am more for the public system, but also in design and construction in Germany, it's more mainly done by consultants and by companies. But operation and assets, keeping the assets and making a long long-lasting design, I think public is a right choice. Of course, you can take also private company to run the show for a while, but I'm not a friend of private operators owned by private operators. I'm not a friend of this. I've seen what the British have done with the British privatization. I think that was a wrong way, what Maggie said. She did.
I mean, there's just for me to answer a little bit. We have some, not a lot, but some smaller companies or some small number of companies where we have working public-private partnerships in Germany also. I'm a fan, for example, of the Dresden model myself. I like it, but it depends also on the people running the show there and how is their commitment to act to this. And it works there, I think.
The asset belongs to the city. You can
No. In Dresden, it's 49.5% Gelsenwasser and 50.5%.
Yes. All property is in it over?
Yes, yes. Okay. So they have like a little bit more, the city has the last say in it, but it's in Dresden, it's the only example I know it works, but basically I can agree on,
but
the water public law has to have the last say, is my opinion.
By the water law, the city is responsible for the
service.
So when something is not working, then the mayor has a problem. Yeah,
right.
So that is
you cannot dispose the of this task. You cannot. You can only get people working with it. But okay, I just wanted to say because I like the Dresden model a little bit, so I wanted to say.
Okay, Klaus. Which person do you have to meet in the water industry?
Which I want to meet, or
Somebody you already met him, but maybe somebody who's listened to
you
us.
You have to. Yeah, you have to.
Somebody has to meet. Who is very interesting in your opinion?
I think what I strongly recommend Carla. Carla is the general director from IWA. He's a very charismatic guy, and his way of teaching and explaining I like very much. He's very clear in what he says. And he's also very much international guy, and I like him to listen to him. Hopefully he comes to the next IFAD again.
Okay, so that's the next guest in our English wastewater talk.
I recommend him, yes. He's a very nice, charming guy, and he's now...
So basically after this wastewater talk, you have to call him and say he has to be guest on the show.
I can contact him if you want to do that.
Yes.
I make sure that he comes to your talk, yes. I
can, okay.
I cannot promise, but I can strongly try it.
Just with you.
Who else you want to have in your talk? You tell me, then I try to get some other people for you as well.
Okay.
Last question, funny question. Swimming pool or lake?
Lake.
In China?
Good question. It's okay. Also in China, yeah. I would.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the last question, Klaus.
Yeah, I mean, Rüdiger, thank you for being guest on our show. Is there anything else, last words from you that you have to see our millions or billions of wastewater heroes out there you wanted to say to them, maybe?
I hope that you young guys, you continue with the podcast and not only in German language, that you also do something in English, because we have a lot of young international guys here in Germany, young students, they don't speak that good English. So prepare something for them and also bring it out and bring it to the other showroom. And I think on the IFAD in the world, doesn't matter where, in China, in Mumbai, Johannesburg or Istanbul, IFAD is a place to be, and I think that's where you can meet personally, which is much better than on the video. And hopefully we will meet there and have some nice beer, good reused beer. Last, we wanted to make a reused beer on the IFAD. So come and see us next time. Most probably we have a reused beer from a German wastewater treatment plant there.
Okay, I will drink it. I will drink it. Daniel?
Thank you, Mr. Heidebrecht.
Yeah.
Klaus, any last words?
Yeah, as always in our podcast, last words are Panta Ray, everything flows downhill. Thank you guys. Bye.
Bye.
Bye bye.